My dad would always make that noise whenever, like, if I got, like, a bad grade or something. I'd come home, oh, man, I got a D on this thing. He would just make that noise, and it did not help. And then I got grounded.
Bob Barker always made that noise when I'd be like, I bid $100. He's like, oh, it's only 50. So I totally understand.
Gentlemen, welcome to this week's PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 187 for Thursday, August 13th. I'm glad you're here. Dan Stapleton, I'm glad you're back.
I'm glad to be back. Well, mostly glad. I'm already tired of you people again.
I know you've been exposed to the wonders of Canadian Costco and all that business and those exotic treatments, but...
They put bacon bits on their pizza.
My God. Unbelievable.
Have they no shame.
I don't know, Josh, but we're glad to have you here as well.
Why, thank you. It's good to be here, as always.
Josh Augustine, Alpha Intern, and joining him as well, Andy Bauman, podcast producer extraordinaire.
I don't know whether to comment on the 187 or the fact that there might be some ladies listening, not just gentlemen.
Actual ladies?
I don't know. Hopefully.
Wait, where was the 187? Where was the murder? I missed that.
Well, that's this week's show, right? It's a number 187. Okay. There was no actual murder taking place.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought that was like a police code, like, I've got a 430. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it is, really?
It's also a movie starring Samuel Jackson.
It is police code for homicide.
Wow. You guys have experience with this, and I don't. I'm jealous.
It's the murder of sound quality that the PC Gamer Podcast turns into. Just kidding.
And lastly, of course, we have Max McGee, beta intern.
Yeah, 187 was also a really bad third-person shooter game. 187, Ride or Die.
Whoa.
I think I do remember hearing something about that. Was that ever on the PC?
I don't know. I never played it.
I kind of hope it was like a text adventure where you just, at the very beginning, you're asked ride or die.
And you press Y or N.
Right. No. Yeah. Crap, die. Oh, no.
Abort, retry, fail, ride, die. All right. So today we're going to be talking about the new headgear coming to TF2. I'm wearing my hat in celebration of that announcement.
I looked it up. 187 Ride or Die on PlayStation 2 and Xbox.
Ooh. There you go. What year?
05.
Oh.
The PC was spared.
So it would be, yeah, X for ride, triangle for die.
Got it. Sorry to interrupt, Devin.
No, it's quite fine. I'm going to go on like a half-hour rant on the Armor 2 expansion that just got announced today. And Josh, first of all, is going to kick it off by telling about this horrible dragon that's coming back to World of Warcraft, I guess, and that's going to kill everybody. Josh?
Oh, yes. Good old Onyxia. It's like the most classic quintessential raid boss of World of Warcraft. It's the big boss where if you've seen the dots, dots, more dots, 50 DKP minus, that video, that's Onyxia.
more dots. Ellipses.
More dots.
Yeah. So basically what they're doing is they're taking it. It's a level 60 raid boss. They're revamping it to level 80. They're adding a few tweaks, but it's basically going to be the kind of the classic gameplay. And they're upgrading all the gear, but they're leaving the old models because it is tier 2 helms, which is kind of accepted as of the old gear. Those were like the coolest looking helms of all time. And so everyone's really excited to get the old gear looking again. And you can even, it's going to drop a mount that is Onyxia, basically. It's like Onyxia's broodling, but it has the same model. So you can be riding Onyxia or flying all over the place, and it's going to be incredible.
So it's safe to say Onyxia is getting her groove back.
Yes, she is.
It's amazing how, it's amazing to me how one man's incredible is another man's could not care less.
Aww. Well, I could say anything about World of Warcraft, Dan, and you could care less.
Exactly. I'm just, you know, I find that remarkable.
Well, and on that note, Josh does have some other things to say about it.
Hold on. We can all benefit if that guy makes another Flash video about dotting the 80 Onyxia.
That is very true.
Everybody wins.
Everybody. But yes, Josh, you have some wonderful predictions about this WoW expansion rumor that's going around.
So I was doing the new dungeon last night for the first time, Trials of the Crusader, and I realized they had these little monks fighting in the ring with you. And I realized they have a lot of NPC monk class characters. And I decided that's going to be the next hero class. Everyone is like 99% sure it's going to be a caster. Everyone is 99% sure it's going to be called Cataclysm. I just decided that everybody else is wrong. So it's going to be a monk. They're going to be like kind of Warhammer warrior priest. They're going to be a melee healer, kind of caster hybrid. They're going to use the combo point system because Blizzard Blues have been saying that's their favorite. They want more classes to use it. It's going to be independent of target. It's going to use energy. So they're going to go in, punch, and do very light damage. And then their finishing moves are going to be heals or spell damage. And so they're basically going to be a hybrid that doesn't have to switch talent specs. It's going to be all in one, but you can only do one at a time.
Well, I'm glad that somebody else here is willing to make predictions that will almost certainly be wrong about Blizzard products, like I did a couple of weeks ago about StarCraft 2 coming out in 2009. That's foolishly optimistic.
But solidarity.
In my defense, I had just gotten back from talking to the lead designer, Dustin Broder, and I asked him if it was going to come out in 2009. And of course, he wouldn't commit to anything, but he was saying we really want to come out in 2009. We're really trying, you know. So I'm like, oh, okay, maybe they'll do it. Nope.
Don't believe them. And then
that's what I get.
Some other quick hit predictions. Obviously, goblins, worgens are the new races. That's pretty obvious. It's going to be Cataclysm. The main focus is going to be Emerald Dream. They're going to recreate Azeroth in a phased instance with everything totally destroyed. Kalimdor is going to be the center of the explosion. Orgrimmar. Garrosh is going to be the new Lich King. Sarfang will be killed. Thrall will disappear. The Night Elves will lead the charge into the Emerald Dream. Malfurion Stormrage will be there. He'll be the center. I think that's about it.
This is all your crazy prediction?
Yes, that will all turn out to be entirely 100% true, and everyone will hail me as a genius. And everyone here will raise me on their shoulders in the office if all this is true. When all this is true. I apologize.
Oh, wonderful. Josh, thanks for pulling all of those proper nouns. None of us know anything about Odd first of all.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Fantastic. All right, so since you mentioned StarCraft as well, Dan, we got word earlier this week via IGN that Razer is going to be introducing a lineup of StarCraft II themed peripherals. They've only revealed this StarCraft II tote bag, which has a picture of Kerrigan and sort of the Zerg logo on it. But there will almost certainly be a line of keyboards and mice and mouse pads and things like that that Razer does pretty well, we think. Correct me if I'm wrong. I like most of their stuff. And I just want to get your take on, you know, how would you like them to approach something like this? I mean, there's such a thing as over the top when it comes to making a Protoss keyboard or something like that. I don't know if it would go that far, but like, how would you handle rolling out a product line like this? I mean, this is a really good opportunity for Razer.
It's all got to be style, because there's no way that these products can be any better at playing StarCraft than any other mouse and keyboard, really.
You sure?
So,
what if they have special buttons? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Rush. What would be a special button?
Zerg rush, go.
You can
you hit the button no matter which race you're playing. Boom, Zerglings. You got them.
F-13.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're not going to do that. I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say they're not going to design any special functionality for these keyboards and mice.
I'm inspired by Josh's outside the box thinking, so I'm going to call it Zergling button.
Excellent. Yeah, I could see them for newbies, you know, rather than having to remember, you know, B is the barracks or something. If you just put like what each of the hotkeys are on the buttons instead of the letters, that could be really useful to a new player.
So a Z board.
Maybe.
I think somebody's beaten you to that idea.
I mean, I'm trying to think about, is it the Logitech G19 with the LCD built into it, Logan? Okay, the G19. Which I think it retails for, you know, $200-something or something.
Are you talking about the G19 is the new version of the keyboard, right?
Yeah, it has a color little LCD in front of it.
Holy crap.
I mean, the highest end, the craziest, most luxurious thing they could do is something like that, and maybe it would like display the mini map or something. That's totally over the top and unlikely, but
and like useless to anybody who like would love StarCraft 2 that much that they really want to like play competitively or anything. You wouldn't use that. I mean, I have a G15 keyboard, which has the you know black and white LCD on there. I never ever look at it in games. I kind of forget it's there. Even though a lot of games support it, they put like you know your ammo on there or whatever or your resources. I never look at it because all that information is on the generally on the screen, and I would have to you know look away from the screen to look at this little dinky thing down there. That yeah, it's terrible. Honestly, I mean it's not terrible. It's just useless.
I just like the idea of software and hardware meshing together, I guess. Yeah. I mean, maybe the LCD could just be used to show a sexy slideshow of Kerrigan.
Right. I mean, you can certainly, you know, do stuff like that. But I mean, it's anything they're going to do is going to be purely style. It's going to be, you know, just a theme of the Protoss or your, you know, or the Zerg or your favorite race. You know, it's not going to play the game any better. So, you know, it's just like, you know, if you're a football fan, you get a football jersey, you know, it's the equivalent.
Indeed. Indeed.
This podcast is edited on a, ExactMat speed side razor.
the mouse? Oh no, the mouse pad.
Full disclosure, right. Just in case anybody, you know, gets suspicious that we're in their pocket.
I have the Razer Destructor. I actually like it a lot. It's really smooth. This sounds over the top and hyperbolic, but I wouldn't game at least an FPS without it. It's really helpful.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of the Microsoft Sidewinders, like the new ones since they came out. This like I have big hands, so it fits me very well. And I love the scroll wheel. So it's got like a metal clicky scroll wheel. It's mm-hmm. very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that has really good thumb buttons as well.
Oh yeah, the thumb buttons are also great. The vertically arranged thumb buttons.
All right, so something else we want to talk to you guys about today are hats and hills. And since the theme of this podcast is quickly becoming predictions, so there's 18 new hats coming in the classless update revealed for Team Fortress 2 this week. Classless in the sense that it's not, the content isn't designed around the soldier, the engineer, the demo as we sort of expected it might have been. But instead, they're supporting this new drop system that they rolled out in the previous update. Each class is going to have you know more hats available to them. On the main page, they have the soldier in a Viking hat. They have the spy in a little bowler English cap. They have the pyro in an ironic fireman's hat. Are there any specific bits of headgear that seem obvious or you guys would like to see in the game? That would be funny.
Do they make sandwich hats?
Ooh.
I don't know. What type of headgear? I mean, you could have like the English Royal Guard. I don't know what are those guys called that sit mm-hmm. outside the palace with the
oh yeah
the big Marge Simpson hat. I'm not just not much of a hat guy.
Oh, yeah, shucks. I'd be a fan of a twirly propeller beanie. I could see that.
Right,
that's cool.
There's always the beer cap.
Right,
with the straws coming down.
Ooh, I like that. That fits the demo right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Just throw some whiskey in there and
yeah, it's good.
They're bound to have like the big Russian fuzzy hat.
They yes. do.
It's, oh, they do. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's actually
there's the heavy. He's wearing it, and the engineer's wearing a 10-gallon Texas hat, or whatever they're called.
10-gallon. You would know, right? You're closest.
I would
to Texas
know
from all of us.
But I don't.
From Arkansas.
Arkansas.
Very good. Very good. All right. So the other announcement, we're expecting a third one today, but the one from yesterday was that they're going to be introducing a new game mode, King of the Hill, and. That announcement featured one of my favorite lines from these little teaser pages that they do, which is, since their discovery in 1895, hills have fascinated kings. I don't know, that's almost definitely Eric Wolpaw, one of Valve's writers doing those things, just from knowing a bit of his style, and he wrote most of Portal, and it's just a really fun way of doing things, and of course there's little secret newspaper clippings and pages hidden if you click in certain parts of the teaser pages, so feel free to look around on forums or click around on those if you're curious.
What website is that?
It's just teamfortress.com. So after we learned last week that Dragon Age is going to be delayed just a little bit to November 3rd, we got the announcement that whatever version of the game you buy at retail, and I'm assuming this is going to include you know downloadable versions in somewhere or another. Basically, EA and BioWare including a voucher within that retail copy for $15 worth of downloadable content. And there's also some sort of bonus item. You can use Mass Effect 2. So basically, the idea is here, they're basically including incentives for people that buy the game new to discourage people from buying the game used. And I just want to get your guys' take on if there's any downside to this, if it's a fair thing for the publisher to do, if it's the right sort of response to the massive amount of used game sales through places like GameStop. So yeah, fire away.
I mean, it's obviously anti-consumer. It's trying to take away basically something that the consumers have taken to be a right of theirs to sell their games after they're done with them. Now, naturally, the publishers hate because they don't get any of that money after it's, you know, passed from one person to another. I mean, is it right? Is it, and it's, that's kind of depends on where you sit. I mean, do you think that the game maker deserves to be compensated for every individual person that plays their game? Or do you think that once they sell a copy of that, that game, that, that, that copy can be sold freely? And, you know, it depends on your personal philosophy there. Right and wrong is very subjective.
Yeah. Right and wrong. I mean, at this point, if you buy the people's games, you're playing by their rules. So, I mean, there is no really right or wrong. Either you agree with them or you don't. It's their choice. I mean, it could hurt sales, I guess, a little bit. And in that way, I mean,
it depends on what this content is. I mean, if it's not essential to the game, if it doesn't make the game significantly less fun to play if you don't have it, then who cares?
So what it does add, according to Shack News, the downloadable, I'm quoting here, the downloadable Stone Prisoner add-on, free with a new copy, otherwise priced at $15, allows players to add the mighty stone golem Shale, which is a character, to their party, and is said to bring hours of additional gameplay through quests, environments, and items. So it seems pretty major. I mean, that's one potential party member and whatever his, you know, side quest line is, and a few items.
Well, and they're also, I mean, It's basically just exactly the same thing as any other piece of DLC. It's just the only difference is it's included in a new copy. So, I mean, I don't really have a problem with that. I mean, you can still go out and get it if you get the game secondhand. You can go and buy it for $15. Just like if I get a copy of Fallout 3 secondhand, I could still go and download Mothership Zeta for $10, and it's the exact same thing. The only difference is they're just giving you something extra when you buy it, right?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
it's another example of just the way publishers are handling the division of digital content and disc-based content in terms of patches and what they're delivering on day zero, so to speak. And it's just another curious example of another approach to that that's worth noting, I guess.
Yeah, it's an extra little buyer's incentive, you know. I mean, It's something they didn't even have to do. They didn't have to give that to people that buy the game from, the first people that buy the game. It didn't have to do that at all. It could have been, putting it out there, as a $15 downloadable add-on for everybody. That's one way to look at it.
Indeed, indeed. Well, feel free to let us know your thoughts on this if you feel like any of your rights are somehow infringed by where an EA handling the distribution of the game this way. But otherwise, one other quick announcement. I'm the one that's most thrilled by this, perhaps only one that's thrilled by this. A new Arma 2 expansion just got announced today. There's not really any details out there for it. Two screenshots. It's going to be called Operation Arrowhead. It'll take place in the fictional Central Asian country of Takistan. I always love their fictional country names. In the base game, Chernarus, which is sort of like Cherno Russia, is the one there. Restoring peace and protecting civilians in the U.S. Army roles from basic infantrymen through special operatives, pilots, and tankers. So really nothing new there. One of the screenshots sort of shows a Middle Eastern type environment. So if it is sort of desert based, that would be a nice change of pace to the extremely foresty base games environments. I'll definitely go out of my way to keep you guys posted on that. But in the meantime, just a quick public service announcement for your wallet. Trine, which... Is it Trine or Trine? I don't, we have this discussion
it's
like
it's Trine.
It's Trine. Okay, cool. We know it debuted at $30, which maybe seemed like a little bit too much for what some people thought was just a platformer game. Still a very pretty game.
Well, it is just a platformer game. It's a clever platformer game, and it is a pretty, it is a attractive looking platformer game. But it's a platformer.
Very good. Yes. So until August 19th, there's a little bit of a sale of 25% off. That's $22.50 for the game. So if you've held back and still curious about it, feel free to hop over to Steam and take a look. All right, so for our main topic this week, I want to get you guys to reflect a little bit on, and we always talk about what our favorite games are, our favorite game experiences. I want to get a little bit of a more hardware-oriented discussion going and get you guys to mention what your most memorable hardware upgrade is. And what was the big thing that brought about those software experiences for you, or you camped out for at a store for, or your parents had to buy you for Christmas or something? What was that big, most memorable upgrade that stands out for you? Dan, why don't you go ahead?
Well, let's see. I guess, and the thing that that stands out most recently, of course, is the monitor I keep talking about on here. I went on Woot.com and like a couple of years ago, and they had a 42-inch Westinghouse monitor. Woot is very impulse based. I mean, it's a one deal, one day site. So what the hell? I pulled the trigger on it. I cannot go back to playing on a smaller screen. I love having it just like fill my entire field of vision when I'm sitting like, 3 feet away from it. The resolution isn't quite as high as, a 30-inch monitor would be, but it's good enough for, everything. So I love it. It has really improved my gaming experience.
What's been the most impressive, would you say Fallout 3? I know you spent a lot of time in Fallout 3. Was that kind of the game that made it for you?
No, I mean, it's pretty much everything. Everything you mm-hmm. fire up in that. There's not one specific game that just, looks so much better like that. Maybe Supreme Commander. Just because when you're zooming around and you zoom way out and you see like the whole battlefield and you can, see things very clearly because they're kind of bigger. I think that it makes a significant difference there.
Indeed. Well, thanks for sharing that. And hey, Josh, how about yourself? Is there any specific video card that stands out to you or anything else?
The biggest thing was the monitor for me, but obviously Dan's monitor is much better than mine, so it's hard to follow up.
What kind of monitor are you talking about, though?
I just have a Dell 22-inch widescreen, mm-hmm. so it's no 42-inch, but...
What were you going up from?
17-inch, I think.
Yeah, just that's a significant upgrade.
Yeah, it's really nice, and just going to widescreen was really nice. The other big upgrade, not as exciting or flashy as a video card, was this wireless network card that Logan gave me when I first came here. That, like, it's like the ghost... I can't even remember. What do they call the Ghostbusters things? They throw them out and, like, they suck up the ghosts. The traps. Okay, sorry. Oh, yeah, the traps. I thought it had a fancier name. So it's like one of those, but it has like four little antennas. So it plugs into the back and it's on like a long wire. And so I always had trouble in my house getting a network connection, and all my games just kept dropping over and over. But once I got this on the wire, I could throw it out into the hallway and then it'd pick up the network from there. And just that, having stable network connection, has been amazing.
Yeah, and I can definitely sympathize with the dropping of the signal. I just recently got a hard wire into my computer room because I was sick of the dropping connection from wireless. It was the difference is night and day.
Definitely, and that's actually the one I was going to mention too. Not most recently, but making that transition, back in say 1996 or 7. From dial-up to ISDN or cable, or I guess it wasn't cable at the time.
DSL?
DSL. I mean, just such a fundamental difference between the consistency of your experience. Obviously, netcode was still evolving at the time, and maybe you're still playing games over a serial modem, things like that. But that was a big impact on games like Tribes for me later in the game. And I guess more recently, it sounds kind of simple, but When I had a 4870 about a year and a half ago, that was such a stable card for me. It was completely reliable, never had any issues with it, never overheated, never gave me any trouble in any games. And that was just a nice period of not having to worry about anything, I guess, that stands out for me.
A 3870 is still a pretty good card.
It is. I think it's $100 these days, about. Mr. Max, how about you?
Well, when I first started college, I had a little rinky-dink pre-built Dell computer that I was working on that I'd had for several years, and it was getting pretty up in its years, so I decided to save up a bunch of money across multiple birthdays and Christmases, and I ordered a whole bunch of parts off of Newegg and put together my own brand new computer, which I'm still using today.
What was the upgrade from the old CPU to the new one and the video card?
Oh man, I do not remember what was in that old Dell computer, but it was pretty old. The new computer I have now has like a AMD dual core at 2.6 gigahertz. I've got a GeForce 8800 GTS, 2 gigs of RAM. And what got me to do it was, of all things, I really wanted to be ready for Team Fortress 2. That was the one game I kept looking at, and I was like, man, this game looks so cool. I really dig the art style. So I wanted to make sure I was ready for that.
Ironically, that game doesn't take a big
I know, rig. And then come to find out, yeah.
But hey, it's a good excuse. Yeah, building a computer, I should have mentioned that. That's a really kind of fundamental moment, too, where you just, it feels so good when you turn it on and you put it together and then, you know, oh, you want to tweak something. So you get under the hood, kind of move stuff around, tweak it a bit. That is really good.
It doesn't feel nearly as good as when you put it all together and you turn it on and then nothing works properly.
Yeah.
almost something up wrong.
Almost invariably, and every computer build I've ever done, there's been one part that didn't work right.
Yeah. My first computer that I put together was perfect, and it ran perfect for months. And then anyone I've built after that, I've had trouble with. But that first one was amazing. Beginner's luck.
But as we've said before, I mean, that's a charming part of the process, sort of. I mean, your rig is your Millennium Falcon. You have to kick it every once in a while and get that hyperdrive up and running somehow. But, I mean...
But yeah. She's the fastest hunk of junk in the galaxy.
That's right. She's got her quirks. She can make the Kessel run in whatever seconds.
12 parsecs.
12 parsecs. Thank you. Thank you, Dan.
Do you realize that the people that are listening to this, they will kill you if you get Star Wars quotes wrong. Come on.
I'm much more of a Star Trek guy than Star Wars, unfortunately.
Blasphemy!
We'll have that discussion another time. Andy Bowen.
They'll come after you for that, too.
Very good.
Well, I mean, there's already been a discussion of the monitor upgrade that, you know, changed your life. I'll echo the points that were made. And I never really understood how awesome monitor upgrades could be. Because all throughout college, I stuck with these dual 21-inch, like, hunk of meat monitors that were good monitors in their day. And they were 75 pounds each.
Yep.
And I never upgraded to the LCD until, like, I don't know, 3 years ago, I got the Dell 24-inchers. And I never realized how much of a difference that could make. And that's been the single most eye-opening thing that I've done. You know, in the past, you know, 5 years. And it's just...
And monitors, I mean, people really do kind of underestimate how important they are. I mean, they...
Exactly, that's what I was going to bring up.
But I mean, yeah, it really is like how you interact, how you see your computer. I mean, without the monitor, you got nothing.
Yeah, and the transition from sort of a aging CRT technology to the best quality 24-inch LCD was spectacular, and especially in gamings. And back then, I was... obsessed with Battlefield 2, and just playing Battlefield 2 in a widescreen monitor changed the game, you know.
Didn't Battlefield have like a big problem going to widescreen?
Yeah, you just had to do a little tweaking.
Yeah, there's all kinds of weirdness in there, and DICE was all weird about it because they didn't want some people to have a competitive advantage because they had a wider field of view, so they didn't want to enable it.
Yeah,
really kind of annoying. But I think they've since gone back and fixed that. I'm not sure.
So speaking of monitors, I mean, would you guys agree that it's usually more valuable to sort of just go into a store, not necessarily buy it there. I mean, the best deals for the most part you're going to find online. Dan's a good example of that. But just getting that anecdotal experience with the monitor, seeing it for yourself, hopefully running, you know, in a game environment, is probably more valuable than looking at the refresh rate and, you know, the response time in milliseconds, whatever.
And generally, I mean, when I was, you know, I was thinking about getting a new screen lately because mine, you know, this is one of the hazards of getting a refurb model off of Woot is that about 2 years in, I started having a few problems with it, especially with like image persistence, which is kind of the equivalent of burn-in on an LCD. Nothing actually burns and it's all temporary, but like if I leave a window on screen for a few minutes and then move it, I can kind of see a shadow there for a little while until it kind of works its way out.
Hmm? Is that the same as ghosting?
No. Ghosting has to do with when things are moving. Like if you move something rapidly, you'll see kind of a trail behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it might have something to do with it. You know, some of the principles, but you don't see ghosting in any modern LCD. So I was thinking about buying a new one. And I was talking to Will Smith at Max PC, and he was saying that things like the contrast ratio are like completely cooked up marketing numbers. They don't really mean anything.
True, but there are
there's so many different ways of measuring contrast ratio that it means nothing.
There are specs that are important though, and a lot of the time it's hard to get the goods on those specs from a store. They won't have them listed and stuff, and they might not even be on the box. And I'm talking about the type of panel that it is. And there's a bunch of like acronyms that I don't know them all. Basically, the difference comes down to whether it's like a 6-bit panel or an 8-bit panel, and it's important to know, you know, you're getting a quality panel if you're getting an 8-bit panel, or if you're not getting a quality panel if you're getting a 6-bit panel. And it's like they won't tell you stuff like that at a store. So you got to really do your research, I think. And Maximum PC is good about making sure, you know, they'd look into everything really deep. So that's
Will's recommendation to me, if I were to pick up a new, you know, LCD TV to use as a monitor, was anything Samsung and 120 hertz refresh.
Right. Well, thanks for sharing all that, guys. Really appreciate it. Let's transition into some questions from our lovely listeners.
Hi, PC Gamer. I was playing Team Fortress 2 this evening, and it was me versus, as a medic in arena, versus a ton of other people. And it felt really good, and I wonder, has there ever been a moment in multiplayer gaming when it was you, just you, versus basically the whole enemy team, you know, where it was just you going solo behind enemy lines, I suppose? You know, I'd like to hear that answer to that question. So, great. Have a great day. Bye.
Man, I mean, all those kind of moments kind of fade together for me. You know what I mean?
I've got a specific one. You guys can think about one while I go. This sort of scenario tends to happen a lot in Counter-Strike because it's, you know, big team-based game, and you're always the last guy left against the whole team, and it's really intense because one, you know, just a couple of shots and you're down. And this specific incident happened way back in the day before even Counter-Strike 1.6 original. It was like beta. I don't even know the version. And it was on DE Dust, and it was before the bomb had to be in a specific location to plant it. You could just plant it anywhere. And what I ended up doing was, I was the last person left. I ended up planting the bomb like on the steps into the inside dark area. And the other team gathered around, and they somehow, I guess they killed me, but the bomb went off and eliminated the rest of the other team. And so we ended up winning. Like, the terrorists ended up winning. So that was one of the most epic things. And of course, they patched that out later. You can't do that now. Because you have to plant the bomb in the bomb area.
Well, I have quite a few of these doing WoW Arena, because it is sort of the same thing where you have like a team of 5 versus 5, and it ends up, you know, you pick people off one at a time, so it ends up, you know, 1 versus 3 or 1 versus 4, depending on who's winning. My favorite story, quick story, is actually, it was my roommate. It wasn't me. I can't take credit for this one. We're on a team. He's a mage. And sorry, Dan, I will keep this fast because I know it's boring you. Try to stay awake. So it just came down to one mage versus a rogue and a mage. And he just was pounding away at him, got the rogue down, got the mage down. He had a sliver of a health, and the other mage had polymorphed him, which means he was helpless and a sheep. And the other mage starts typing. He's laughing because he knows he's going to win. And I'm like, oh man, James, my roommate. I'm like, dude, we lost this. And he just looks at me and he has a smile on his face. He's like, watch this. And he like turns into an ice block right as the other mage casts the killing blow, and then turns around and just blasts him with fire and just blows him away. And it was incredible. It like blew my mind.
It sounds a lot like some Yu-Gi-Oh! Episodes I've watched.
You've actually watched episodes of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Dude, have you seen that TV show? I mean,
nope.
The kid has the deepest voice in the world.
Wow.
It's amazing.
That still doesn't give me a reason to watch that.
But it's hilarious. It's really funny. Anyway,
Evan, I can appreciate the kid's unnaturally deep voice.
Max, thank you. I mean, the hormones are just so...
They're off the charts. I know I've been in the same situation that this caller's been in as a medic in arena. The whole team's dead. But my heart always sings because I know all eyes are on me and I'm going to lose.
That makes you happy?
It doesn't make me happy. It makes my heart sink. Welcome to the conversation.
Oh,
man.
Sink. I thought you said sing. But you get that kind of situation in RTS games from time to time playing team games, because typically if your teammate dies, then you're screwed. Like if you're playing a 2v2 and the other guys are able to kill your teammate, you don't have a chance because you're fighting 2v1. That's not going to go well. But if you can basically use your teammate as bait, you know, they overextend themselves trying to take out your teammate. And the, you know, he's basically dead, but they're on the other side of the map, with all their forces. So that when you take that moment to strike and take out their bases, you still have to, you know, fend off the assault of their remaining forces that wiped out your teammate. But that does, that can be very entertaining.
So yeah, you're saying you abandon your teammates. That's
sacrifices
that's cruel.
Have to be made.
In Demigod, too, I'm trying to remember some of our most memorable matches, but they definitely kind of blend together again. I mean, there's definitely been situations where it's only been our war score lead that's allowed us to, you know, to overtake a disadvantage in level. We almost always play 3-on-3 in Cataract, me, Dan, and Yorm from MaxPC. And I really still maintain that that's one of the most balanced games I've ever played, just in terms of, you know, the ability of the range of abilities, the diversity of the characters, the cooldown times, HP, things like that, just all meshes together so well.
Yeah,
have you fought the Unclean Beast? That man is crazy.
That's and we've seen Norm get his butt kicked as the Unclean Beast too many times to claim that he's too overpowered. Mm-hmm. Right? And we keep hearing that the Oak is supposed to be the overpowered guy, right?
I don't know anything about that. I don't have anything to do with causing that. come for it. No, I mean the Oak just meshes really well with other characters. He can invuln people. He's a great meleeer. Anyway,
that's kind of a different scenario. He's talking about when it's everybody against just you, which doesn't really happen in Demigod. In Demigod, if your two teammates drop for any reason, you're done, unless the other guys are really bad at what they're doing.
Yeah. All right. Good question, Andy. Shoot us another one.
Okay.
Wow.
You sound so certain.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast, this is Joe from Chicago. I had a question about getting more involved in the gaming community. I kind of wanted to get into the industry a little bit more than just playing the games, whether it be reviewing, testing, you know, working with any kind of company. Thought you guys might have some good insight as to maybe where to start, kind of what to look for. This would be kind of like a part-time thing. I'm not too worried about pay. I'm not trying to make a career out of this. Just do what I enjoy a little bit more. I love the podcast. Keep up the good work. And hopefully I will hear from you. Thanks.
We need an intern.
Hey-o.
That's right. Yeah, this is actually a really opportune time to mention that. Thanks for reminding me, Josh. So unfortunately, Max, who has served us so well.
Thank you, Ivan.
Is returning to his studies in Arkansas. Do you go to school in Arkansas? I don't know.
I do go to school in Arkansas.
Okay. Fantastic. And we are on the hunt and or search for a new intern as soon as possible. So if you're in the Bay Area, if you want to come to the Bay Area for a while and you want to help us out part-time, shoot us an email at letters@pcgamer.com.
And we should point out that this is an unpaid internship. So
yes, of course.
So, yeah, that is a catch, if you will.
Indeed. All right. So attacking the question a little bit. There's two quick and easy answers to this. There's tons of websites out there that are covering games, doing game news, and doing their own reviews. One fun game I like to play is typing in the word game and then the noun, like say game, I don't know, burrito, and seeing if there's a website associated with it. There's no game.
Is there a game burrito? Oh,
okay. But there are other ones like gameslurp.com.
Gameslurp.
Yes.
Shouldn't it be a game verb?
Game verb, yeah, game noun, whatever. So there's a lot of these sites out there that are looking for writers. I used to do this sort of thing when I was in college. And yeah, so the other, on the development side, I guess, modding is an easy answer to that. Modding groups are always looking for people to do, you know, promotion, to do art assets, to do design. And most of those sort of communities tend to come from groups of friends that already know each other or play games a lot together. But for the most part, they're pretty welcome, I think.
And I've seen lots of mod groups that will solicit, you know, help from people with, you know, skills that they lack. Although that does require that you already, you know, be well versed in modeling or scripting or other, you know, texturing or what other skills that would be handy in that field. If you're just looking, like if you don't have any skills that can really be applied to game making, I would keep my eye open for focus groups that you might want to take part in. You know, there are lots of times, I mean, Gearbox, for example, has started doing their own focus testing. They have a lab in their building with a bunch of computers set up for Borderlands. And they have people in there almost daily playing the game to test it out and give them feedback. So that's something that more and more studios are doing. There will be opportunities if you want to get a not a job, but if you want to take part in the industry a little bit more, like Joe here seems to want to do.
Yeah, very cool, Joe. Thanks for that question.
There is a gamehug.com.
What does it involve? Is it like social networking?
No, it looks just like a bunch of like kind of crappy Flash games. Oh, help friendly towns grow and glow by building neighborhoods. I don't know.
Boring.
Hey, PC Gaming Podcast. This is Jack from the Bay Area, and I have a question for you guys today. I've been looking for some action RPGs for a while now, and I can't seem to find one that I like. I tried Mass Effect and Oblivion, but I prefer something more along the lines of Fallout 3 with a first-person sci-fi setting, which I did play and enjoyed a lot. Any suggestions? Love the magazine and podcast. Keep up the great work.
First-person sci-fi RPG.
BioShock?
Yeah, and that's not... It's a shooter with a few RPG elements, unlike Fallout, which is an RPG with shooter elements. I think of it as.
I mean, Oblivion's the obvious one. I'm just assuming this guy's played that. And
yeah, he mentioned that he wants sci-fi though. Those are hard to come by. Those are very
hard. They are.
You didn't like Mass Effect?
I don't know. Yeah, that's about as good as it gets.
He wanted it. He didn't like the third-person perspective, I guess.
Oh, I see, yeah.
This is kind of a bad recommendation in that case, if he didn't like Mass Effect, because Alpha Protocol's combat is pretty remindful of Mass Effect. It's not party-based, but you just sort of have abilities as magic and the gunplay in there affecting your accuracy and things like that. But look for, take a look at Alpha Protocol. I really enjoyed it, mostly for its dialogue system, not so much for its combat. But there's a strong role-playing component to it there, and it's set in a contemporary world. It's previewed in our October issue, I believe. So feel free to take a look at it there as well.
Speaking of October, Borderlands comes out sometime in October, like the 20th, I think. And I think it's sci-fi-y. It's the same sort of wasteland style as Fallout, and it's going to be like a very action-y, RPG-y.
That's true. It is. It is, reminiscent of Fallout in that way, and that's part of why they changed the art style as drastically as they did. They wanted to avoid being compared to Fallout quite so closely, and to every other, post-apocalyptic shooter out there. And it is RPG-esque, but it's, kind of light RPG. It's not as deep an RPG as Fallout is.
If you haven't played Stalker, go back now and play the first Stalker immediately.
Yeah, that one, the interface totally turned me off on. I just couldn't get into it.
Well, fine.
All right. So our recommendations.
You tell them.
Yeah.
Did you say Borderlands lines up with that, though, Max? You played it.
Yeah, Borderlands definitely lines up with that. You go around, you're collecting loot, you have like a basic skill tree for each of your characters, but I mean, it's nothing real in depth.
Yeah, and Fallout pretty much stands alone in that category. But Borderlands is a more of an action-y light RPG.
Yeah, Borderlands definitely hinges more towards the action and less on the RPG.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out.
Speaking of Stalker, here's a question about.
Hey guys, I was wondering if you could share any thoughts on Stalker Call of Pripyat. They keep on saying that it's up for a fall release, or at least a release in 2009, but we haven't really seen or heard anything of it. It sounds really promising. I really loved the first Stalker, and Clear Sky was somewhat disappointing, but I still liked it. And it seems like they're fixing up most of the problems and addressing most of the issues for Call of Pripyat. Let us know. Thanks. Bye.
Unfortunately, I don't have a lot to say on it. I haven't played too much of the Stalker games, maybe just a few hours. But just speaking from our perspective as a magazine, they haven't really approached us to cover it. So as far as I know, personally, it's maybe not going to hit that deadline.
Those guys in particular, we do chase down stories, but those guys in particular are in Russia. So it's kind of difficult to get a hold of them. They switch publishers all the time, and this is not really a regular contact. It's they're a tricky one to get information out of, but we're working on it.
Hey, PCG, this is TJ from Kansas. I heard you talking on the podcast about how CNC4 is going to go to the no more base building model, much like Dawn of War 2. And I'm wondering, do you guys see this as a trend? And if so, do you think it's a good trend or a bad trend? Personally, I kind of like building up my base in RTS, but I've been playing since way back in the Warcraft 2 days. So love to hear your opinion on that, and keep up the good podcast. It's still my favorite. Bye.
Aw, what a sweetheart. So I guess we should clarify, it's definitely not Dawn of War 2. It's not a squad-based game where you have intimate, relationship with your units, et cetera, et cetera. You're definitely still rolling out new units. You're buying things. You have a sort of the equivalent of a barracks in your walker. But you're not building new structures in that sense. I mean, you are building turrets, but it's not the traditional CNC game. But attacking it, the question itself.
Well, it is more comparable to Dawn of War's multiplayer from what I've seen of it so far. In Dawn of War's multiplayer, you have a base, but you don't build. So it's something like that, and also the units are, you're cranking out units. So it's more similar to that, but it is definitely going for a faster, more fluid, gameplay that is, I see it as a variant on traditional RTS stuff, and I don't see it as a bad thing. I see it as, just diversifying the RTS, spectrum. So I mean, you've still got StarCraft 2 coming out with a traditional base building model. You've still got Supreme Commander 2 coming out with a traditional base building model, and probably a few others that I'm just not thinking of right now. So it's not like that's going away, but for me, it's good to see that there are some franchises that are just hanging on to the old ways and making sure those stay around, and you've still got new games to play that are like that. But I also like to see different approaches. This could very well turn out to be a great style of gameplay, and we're not going to find that out unless somebody experiments with it.
Certainly, and I think this is a good example of kind of an argument or a conversation that happens a lot on message boards for fans of older games, especially older PC games, where I guess, Deus Ex is probably a good example where they see something like a cover system, seeing screenshots that make it look a bit more shootery and less of a role-playing experience, and they get really upset about it. They're like, well, the first two games were great. Like, why don't you just...
The second game was not great. No, nobody ever said the first two games were great.
That was a vocal typo, excuse me. But, I mean, they're like, hey, you did this so well. Why not just remake it in a new engine, make it prettier? You got the gameplay down. Don't change that. Well, the thing is, like, when you're remaking a game or doing a sequel, to some extent, you want to broaden your audience, right? You want to bring in new features. You sort of already have, I mean, I'm speaking from a publisher's perspective, not my personal perspective, but for something like Castlevania or those types of series that have seen a lot of iterations and different types of, sort of genre mixing, the idea is you want to bring in new consumers by changing things up a little bit. You still have the strength of the brand, but you're doing something different. Bring it into a shooter setting or an RPG setting, whatever.
Well, and you have what you could call the Tomb Raider phenomenon. How many Tomb Raider games were there before they changed anything, really? I mean, they just kept making the same game over and over again. Mm-hmm. This time Laura has a shorter pair of shorts, and can maybe does a different kind of flip when she jumps. But it was the same game over and over again. The franchise just lost steam and needed to be essentially rebooted. And now it's the same kind of thing. You don't want to remake the same game over and over again, especially if it hasn't been very long since you made that game. Things like StarCraft, Total Annihilation, Colonization, Sid Meier's Colonization would be the other one that's been kind of remade lately. Those games it's been such a long time between when the last time that gameplay was around that you can get away with making something that's very similar with updated graphics and brings back that great gameplay.
I think Tomb Raider is definitely a good example. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm just thinking in terms of I mean, say hypothetically, this is not an accurate number, but you sell 100, you know, a million copies in the first Tomb Raider game, and you know, the next year and a half, the second one comes out. You're basically, if you're building the same experience and just refining that, you're kind of only selling it to that existing base of consumers, right? I mean, how many more people are going to rope in if they haven't been roped in already?
Well, I mean, for the first couple of iterations, you will build on that. I mean, look at Halo 1 and Halo 2. Look at the Grand Theft Auto, you know, 3 and on.
Sure.
They are kind of iterating on the same thing, but they are adding new stuff. But they're not revolutionizing the gameplay, really. But the hype builds from one game to the next. So there is some argument for doing that to a certain extent. After a while, it peters off, like the Tomb Raider.
Indeed. Well, it's a very interesting conversation to me. Hopefully to you guys as well.
And don't be a gamer.
All right, let's move on to our always fun playlists. And we'll start with you, Andy.
Oh,
I guess.
God.
I think I've seen you playing Monkey Island. I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played a lot of games this week. Finished Monkey Island, you know, but that was only probably a 10-hour experience. Not even that. Like
that
eight,
long?
8-hour, yeah. It was amazing how quick it went by. Because
right.
I remember spending a lot more time with that game. Or it seemed like I spent a lot more time with that game when I played it originally. But yeah, it was a good, you know, getting on Monkey Island, everything went by so fast.
Are you talking about Secret or Tails?
Secret. Tails, the new Tails episode doesn't hit till this week or next week, I think.
Right, okay.
And that'll be what I'm playing next week. So if we're doing a future playlist, that's what I played.
That's fine. Totally acceptable.
Cool.
So Max, I think you've mostly wrapped your League of Legends play, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot with Josh now. We've had some really good matches. But outside of League of Legends, the only other thing I've really been playing is the Arkham Asylum demo, which I know I saw Dan checking out last night.
I did play it last night, yes.
What'd you think of it, Dan?
I love the look of it. It's you know, the best looking Batman game ever by far.
Yeah.
The graphics are really impressive. The gameplay, I don't know. I think it's like just the first opening minutes. It's too early to say anything about it because, I mean, you're in the tutorial basically. The combat seems a little bit basic. It's almost all one button.
Yeah, it's very simple. You've got your hit button and your counterattack button.
Right.
And that's about it.
Which kind of makes me sad. Because, you know, part of what I really want to do as Batman is, you know, kind of kick the crap out of people in non-repetitive ways. You know, I want really interesting combat. I'm worried that the combat won't be that interesting. The other thing that kind of annoyed me, but, you know, I see why they did it because they wanted to focus mostly on action, is they have that detective mode, where you push a button. And you go into like detective vision where, you know, objects that you can interact with light up. You can see through walls. You can see, you know, enemies like in a skeletal view, and you can see who's armed and who's not. It's a little bit God mode-ish. There's no actual detective work going on there. You know, it's like, push the button and you see what you're supposed to do is, that's not exactly what I call detective work.
Yeah, sort of my concern when they demoed that specific part of it to us, they were showing how you're trying to track a guard within the asylum who had, you know, had something you wanted, and he had drank alcohol recently. Let's turn on our, you know, chemical filter or something, and the screen sort of tints green, and you can see these particles in the environment, and you follow them. I mean, at that point, it's kind of my same complaint with overly detailed minimaps are just kind of following that HUD element and not actually doing detective work per se. I mean, I know things have to be playable, whatever, but...
Well, I mean the issue I have with it is just like, okay, you have this problem. Push the solve that problem button. Okay, now you have problem B. Push the solve problem B button. You know, it's not actually solving a problem. It's pushing a button corresponding to the problem they've put in your way, which is not very interesting gameplay, so that's why I'm really hoping the combat turns out to be, you know, really up to par, because the detective aspect of the game doesn't seem to be there. I do, however, really like Kevin Conroy's voice as Batman. I love that.
Oh God, yes.
And to me, he that voice is Batman. So, and just having grown up on the animated series, brilliant.
Yeah,
and Mark Hamill. I was disappointed though that they didn't have the animated series actor who played Commissioner Gordon. The Commissioner Gordon they've gotten there is a little bit too gravelly. Gruff.
They do have Harley Quinn, though.
Yeah, they do.
Very good. Well, does that cover your playlist for this week, Dan? I know you've been on vacation.
Yeah, pretty much. Only other thing was I downloaded Chessmaster from Steam and just got my ass handed to me in like 30 seconds. That was sad. I used to be okay at chess, but not anymore, it seems. I've got to practice.
Ooh, if you want to practice, I am always up for that.
We'll see. I don't want to embarrass myself.
Very good. And Josh Augustine.
Yeah. XP in Battlegrounds in World of Warcraft is amazing. So I got my rogue to 80 already. I started just last week. So hit 80 a couple nights ago. And then other than that, I've been playing lots of League of Legends with Max and a couple other friends. It's really fun.
Very good. And as for myself, it's Arma as always. Still having a lot of fun in our server, whether it's 12 people or just a few. There's tons of community maps out there already for it. Really encourage you guys that are playing it to check out armaholic.com. Whether or not you're playing multiplayer or single player maps or whatever, there's tons of great tools on there. I installed this sound mod called VOP Sound, and it replaces almost every audio file in the game, and it's infinitely better than the stock sounds provided by the developer actually. And I also installed a grass mod. There's a lot of sort of ambient grass, if I can use that term, within the game. The whole world is very foresty, and if you're going prone and you're trying to sight enemies, I don't want to call it a hack, but it sort of removes all of that, very brushy, tall grass and lets you sort of, at least play the game that I want to.
And it lets you see all the enemies that you shouldn't be able to see, is what you're saying.
A little bit. But,
well, yeah. See, what Arma needs is a detective vision button.
Indeed. That would be super helpful, yeah. And let's see, I finally downloaded Space Quest last night. I know I said a couple weeks ago, I think, that I was going to hop on that, but I hoped this weekend. And I've been playing a little bit of Wolfenstein 3D, capturing some screenshots for that for an article we're doing as well.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing I should throw in there is Darkest of Days. The demo for Darkest of Days just came out the other day, and it's definitely well worth checking out. It's a time-traveling shooter kind of thing where you travel back in time to, like, the Civil War or World War One, and you're using weapons from those periods most of the time, but then they hand you a super-powered assault rifle from 200 years in the future, and you just blow the crap out of everybody. It's pretty awesome. So, and it is a generation or two behind in graphics in certain areas, like character models, look like from maybe Call of Duty 2-ish, but it does a really good job of making you feel like you're part of a bigger battle.
I think you definitely have to give some kudos for if I'm correct, like a younger or newer developer to try and execute a complicated concept like that with time travel and, mixing of weapons in different settings and multiple settings.
I mean, the time travel itself is not really a mechanic in the game. It's just getting you there.
Sure.
But they did, have multiple settings, so they've got to have several different sets of enemies, different sets of weapons. So they basically have three sets of weapons in there. They have the Civil War weapons, the World War One weapons, a few World War Two weapons, and then futuristic weapons. And all the futuristic weapons are awesome, but yeah, it was a pretty ambitious project for a new developer. They're called 8Monkey Labs. I remember them first showing off the game to us about 2 years ago, and it looked very impressive for a rookie effort
for monkeys.
And I'm glad that it seems to be working out for them. I hope it does well.
Impressive game for 8Monkeys.
Yeah. I would have guessed that at least 15 monkeys worked on it.
Do you think Infinite Monkey Theorem works for games like it does for books?
I don't know. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
I will save that for next time, guys. Thanks for joining us this week. But before we unfold the glass box and closing the eject button that we're going to mash desperately to get out of this podcast, want to remind you folks to send us your finest questions to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com as an MP3 file, or you can give us a ring at 877-404-1337, extension 724. That's PCG as the extension there. And we'd also encourage you guys to visit pcgamer.com, and we'd also encourage you guys to head on over to pcgamer.com, give us a little bit of your personal information, email, name, address, so on and so forth, and we'll send you an excellent magazine every month. And thanks again for joining this week, guys. See you next week. Sorry, this taco's really good.
I don't have one more to eat.
I hate you guys.
You guys are slow.
This air taco is good.
Can that be the title for this week, air taco?
Damn it. Yes.
I have bound you to it.